Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja. Embrace with love.
Good afternoon. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and had a really productive weekend. That's between the last session and this session. But we also just finished a round of very critical primaries. And so we lost some, we win some, you lose some. But that Michigan one was pretty outstanding. And then just yesterday was the Wisconsin one, where I was really hoping that Francesco Hong won hers. But I'm telling you, 0.4 percentage points, and really under Wisconsin law, she could ask for a recount. I don't know that she will. I think they're anxious to rally the Democratic forces in preparation for the November election, but she could, because of that slim margin, she could actually ask for a recount. Now, her campaign would have to pay for it, but she has the right to ask for it. That's part of Wisconsin law. And the same law we have here in Missouri. If it's that kind of percentage point, you can ask for a recount. But to me, all that's happening now is a part of our sort of regeneration of what's going on in the corruption and all that we've endured under the MAGA folks. And, it's not all negative. Sometimes that kind of struggle brings about meaningful change. It brings about a new understanding of one another and each other and of the issues that are facing us. So, it seems like it is total chaos. And some of it has been created by Trump and his folks. But, basically, we are having a role in this as well. We can make sure that we get redirected in a different kind of way so that what we have is what people need. And that's like affordable housing, clean air, clean water, access to water, excellent education, all the things that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights tell us we're supposed to have, no matter where we are in this world. So that's the thing that guides me, is like, are our human rights being met under any administration, under whether it's local, state, or federal? And so we still have a lot of work to do, and people still across the world are looking at us to say, how long are y'all gonna let this man create havoc, not just on y'all, but on the rest of the world? And so to that end, we do have a lot of work still to do. Last week, in fact, Saturday, I was on the panel for missing and murdered women and put in the spotlight on that issue that does not get enough attention. And you remember that I had Alicia McCauley, who is a WashU fellow. That was her project, and she did an excellent job of pulling it all together. I was on the panel with Senator Mosley and person from the Salvation Army who specifically deals with trafficking. And I did learn quite a bit, but it was a pretty powerful panel, and we got our information out, and I hope people understand their assignment. And when I say that means when you go to an event like that and you get that information, you got to do something with it. You're either talking to your neighbor, your family, you in your church saying, what are we going to do about this? You at your sorority saying, what are we going to do about this? But the number of Black women that are missing is really ridiculous, as is the number of missing children, particularly in this country. And we can only assume the worst, that they have been trafficked or killed for whatever reason, but it is not good outcomes. We know that. And so really the kind of spotlight that needs to be on that issue still is not there. It is the white children who get the amber alerts quicker than ours. And here's one thing I learned that I didn't know, that when you have a missing child, you don't have to wait the 24 hours. It's like wait 24 hours because you don't know. With a missing child under new legislation, if you know that they're missing in like 10 minutes, you can report that. So I think that all of that was good information that we need to know. What I'm trying to find out now is, I know it was live stream because it was at Westside Baptist Church out there in North County, and they may have it on their YouTube channel, or they may have done something with it. But I think if I get a link to it, I definitely will put it on my website so that people have access to it. But it was definitely very insightful, very powerful, and people seem very engaged and really quite flabbergasted that this stuff is happening right up under our noses. Because I gave them the example of the pimp that was sending the Uber over there to Epworth Children's Home. That's supposed to be a home where children who are already compromised and vulnerable need safety and protection, and yet this man was sending an Uber so to pick up this child. So this is literally happening right up under our noses, so we need to be more aware of what's going on, particularly with our children. And so, there's a lot going on, and one of the things that's going to happen next week is the Organization for Black Struggle and Williams and Associates. We are have brought together a cohort of concerned people because we're getting ready to launch an initiative around black male suicide. And I've talked about this because the numbers have skyrocketed since COVID, and we don't seem to know why. I'm not gonna say we don't care. We just don't know what's going on. And our young people are crying out for help many different ways. And sometimes it looks very negative, it looks very destructive. But that suicide rate ought to really touch all of our hearts. And so we're going to have a press conference next week. We'll have folks on the radio who are doing that work around young black suicide. And we're going to have a resource event at Northside Movement Center on August 22nd. But more of that, we're going to have a whole show on that next week. But I just want you to be aware of that. And speaking of young people, I was in the store buying some stuff for our organization, and I saw one of my young people in there buying a computer, a laptop for his daughter. And so of course we hugged because he grew up as a kid. I'm talking about like five, four, five, and six. And so now he's an adult with a daughter in high school. And so I'm standing there about to like pay for my stuff, and he comes and slaps his card on the computer. And I said, "Boy, what are you doing?" And I asked the girl at the desk, I said, "Did he mess up the order?" She said, "No, he paid for it." I said, "What?" And I looked around at him, and he nodded his head. And that was a moment for me, y'all. I kind of lost it because he didn't have to do that. He didn't even know how much my order was for. So I'm pretty sure that was his way of saying thank you, Mama Jamala, for all you do. But it was like a moment of reckoning for me. And I was having not so good a day because I had heard that the circuit attorney's office was not going to pursue a case of wrongful conviction that we've been working on for 30 something years. So I was not kind of happy that day, and for that to happen really just lifted my spirits. But I'm saying all that to say that's why we have to invest in our young people. When we don't get the returns. We do not get the returns. And speaking of young people, and speaking of somebody that's making an impact, I'm going to introduce you to Grace Griffin, who is the 2026 Jamala Rogers Young Visionary. And so we're going to hear all about what she's doing, why she's got that title, and why she got the grant amount that comes with that. So welcome to the show, Grace.
Hi, Mama Jamala. Hi, everyone. My name is Grace Griffin. I'm a rising senior at MICDS, and I'm a proud East St. Louisan.
Yeah. So, Grace, one of the things I think I told you in advance is like, because this is the 250th anniversary of this country, and because it seems like this is a benchmark where we ought to be reflecting, talking about where we've come, what we need to do to move forward, to build and fortify this democracy. How should people of African descent be looking at this benchmark? And I've had various responses, but you are the youngest one that I've asked. You've only been in this world like a fraction of what those other people have. So they may be a little bit jaded in their responses. So you, what do you think from your standpoint? And you're in East St. Louis, which is not exactly one of the most vibrant places on the planet. You have a lot of promise. You come from a family that affirms history and excellence. What, how should young people be looking at this 250th anniversary of the country?
So part of my approach to this question and also my project with the Jamala Rogers Young Visionary Award is youth advocacy, but also youth education. So educating our communities about environmental racism, about systemic racism, about these historical policies put in place that affect our communities today.
Yeah. So you see a role, a very active role of young people going forward in terms of really making this democracy live up to its true meaning and to make sure that young voices are included in that.
And to do that, I think a part of moving forward is looking back. So looking back at the policies and how do we right those wrongs? And I feel like youth are well positioned to be at the forefront to learn and also make change.
Yeah, I agree with that because some of those primaries that pushed candidates over the top to victory was because a lot of young people were engaged in those campaigns. And so every time I think we can measure the impact that young people are having on any particular situation or issue or problem. And again, that's where I put my money any day of the week is on young people. So talk a little bit about your project that got you the award, but also what you were doing even if you hadn't got the Young Visionary Award. And I just was thinking before you came on, Grace, that this year was unprecedented because I think it was the first time that a previous visionary was responsible for the next for another visionary. I mean, they go out and they like do the publicity, but Jonathan Paulfus, whose program you were in, was the person that says you need to apply for this. So I don't think that has ever happened. So that's something to celebrate, and I love me some Jonathan. So talk about your project, how long you've been doing it, why you're doing it, and why you think it's important to do, particularly in East St. Louis.
So I've been working on food justice and environmental equity since I worked with Jonathan Poulos and his organization and American Friends Service Committee. And I did that work particularly focusing on food equity, food injustice, because I like gardening and I love cooking. But not everyone has the resources in low income and Black communities or access to do healthy eating or gardening. And part of what I want to see is that is widespread education about how to do clean eating, education about how to create food for yourself to sustain communities, families. And a lot of that requires looking at the barriers to do that, to do so. And a lot of those barriers come from pollution in our soil and our water and excessive heat in urban communities. Who wants to tend to a garden in 95 degrees with no shade? And also looking at other barriers like lack of green spaces, where are the gardens going to go? So a lot of that, so when you're looking at the barriers, it points you back to environmental racism and systemic racism. So that's where I'm focusing my work now. And my project with the Jamala Rogers Young Visionary Award is it focuses on education. So looking at environmental race, the history of environmental racism in Black communities across our region, so East St. Louis, but also the shared history in North St. Louis. And it also looks at actual hands on the ground cleanups and volunteering at local community gardens because they also need resources like people resources. They need the hands to do the work. And then finally, it focuses on policy change because policy is where our work is going to have a lasting impact. It's going to validate our work, essentially. We need buy-in from community leaders who are going to say, yeah, we're going to support your efforts by implementing policy that makes it so environmental racism stops. It can't prevail.
Well, I know one of the term environmental racism was first coined by Dr. Benjamin, well, I could say Reverend Benjamin Chavis, during the 1982 struggles against a toxic landfill there in North Carolina. But it really was Dr. Robert Bullard who popularized it. And I think for a lot of Black folks, particularly people of color, had never really seen the environment in that way. Because usually when we think about the environment, we think about clean streams, trails that, folks can go on. But what they introduced us to is a whole nother world. And to your point, like how our environment is being compromised by toxins. And those toxins can come in many different forms. And so when you start to look at a healthy life, it's already compromised because of where we live. And now they got the data down to the cellular level of a zip code. And so living in certain zip codes automatically is shaving off years of life. And so the environment is a very important place of struggle. Right now. So when we talk about a battlefield, we talk about communities that are battling against toxins from corporations that are polluting streams, polluting the air. But we also are talking about like you said, access to food and water. All of those are part of it. So then when people really started looking at like the which communities were most at risk and which communities were being targeted for landfills, toxic landfills and all of that, it was black, poor black communities. I mean, that's how you got Cancer Alley in Louisiana. And so what we see is those communities have been fighting. And one of the points you mentioned was like the policy issues, because if you have deregulation of some of these corporations where they can dump, they can pollute the sky, and I think about all the time, Grace, of at one point asthma was almost a done deal. Like nobody had asthma. And then all of a sudden, all these kids have asthma. You go in the schools, you got asthma this, asthma that. In our youth group, on the applications, asthma, asthma, asthma. Like, wow, what? But
And a
it's
lot
the
of those cases are concentrated in poor Black communities. And
absolutely.
because those are the people who can't go out to parks and other green spaces to rid themselves of that pollution that's in their communities because there's no policy to protect them or even give them options like parks or green spaces where they could get rid of these symptoms.
And so one of the big deals now is the data centers, which is an environmental issue. I mean, it's people think it's a political issue, but the people who are opposing it is from an environmental standpoint, because A, it's taking up space. B, is it uses lots of resources, particularly water, to cool off all of the equipment. But it's also connected to higher utility rates for people, so they don't want it. And so I'm thinking about the policy piece again, like who. I think it was Festus or Fenton, I can't remember which one, when they told their city council, we do not want a data center. And then we said, oh, we're going to give it to you anyway. And so the next election, they wiped out half of the city council and the mayor. And then the next time, they got the rest of them. And so who laws are important. Elections are important. Who you put in office is important. And so, have you had the opportunity to have to advocate in front of one of these bodies or talk to a legislator about what's going on and what was the response that you had?
Yes. So recently, I went to a meeting about community success, I'll call it that, where you have all of these organizations, some working in health, community health. You had representatives from the Board of Education in East St. Louis, and then you had city planners like Robert Betts in East St. Louis. You also had Ameren, an organization that's helped with supplying jobs and also handles a lot of like the facilities in that
Utilities.
way. Yeah, utilities, in East St. Louis. And I a lot of the conversation was around the conversation had shifted a few times, but then the conversation shifted to school attendance, where the argument was that, well, there are these high truancy rates, so we need to shift the culture in East St. Louis to one that supports school attendance. And I argued that I don't think that the culture is one that supports truancy. I think it's one that can't achieve it. Literally, like, the community is not healthy. It starts with community health. So how can you go to school if you didn't have food the night before? How can you go to school if the transportation is unsafe? How can you go to school if there are all of these other ifs and barriers? So I think that the real root starts at it starts with creating these healthy communities that support the goals and dreams and aspirations.
No, I think you're exactly right, and particularly around school attendance, because when I think about, for example, the latest cut to SNAP benefits for parents and what impact that's going to have, not just on the individual homes, but some of those programs are in schools or in churches. And so when you talk about young people going hungry, and then you expect them to not just learn, but to excel. Those two don't really go together. So I'm curious about what the response was of the decision makers, the policy makers around the suggestion about, like, it's not just about this, it's about these, which if you're trying to get to the root cause, here's some of the root causes. So what was the response to that?
So we were voting on like what's the biggest issue that we need to tackle on this task force that all of these organizations were coming together to make. And we agreed. We decided on community health and wellness as opposed to focusing on education solely, because if you get to the root, then you'll accomplish the other tasks down the road. So that's where we landed.
And so some of the action steps looks like what?
So I'm now serving on the task force, and we're looking at mapping resources for food banks, but also what is it? Transportation to those resources, transportation to healthier alternatives. Because in East St. Louis, there's a very big problem where we are struggling with more liquor stores and convenience stores that often sell highly processed, high fat, high sugar foods instead of actual fruits and vegetables. We're struggling with more of those kinds of stores than grocery stores. So it's about bridging the gap between the people and the resources. So transportation to those resources, but also mapping food banks and parks. And so it's about getting people access to the systems that are already in place, because it's a two-part step how they're framing the task force. There's a 90-day sprint and then a long-term 12-month plan.
Well, we definitely have to hear more about that, because I think that oftentimes these initiatives start and there's a lot of hoopla around them, and then they fizzle when it comes time for the real work. But when the rubber has to hit the road, then all of a sudden, like, people get like distracted with other new problems. And so all the work that people have put in to lay out like particular solutions and alternatives, that gets lost in the sauce.
And
Go ahead.
I'm sure that you've worked with a lot of initiatives like this. Has there been anything that has helped you like see the longevity or see actual like long-term success?
So the biggest, and you're right, I've been a part of a lot of them, and lately I've been really trying to curtail them, because depending on who's initiating it, it's probably not going to go anywhere, because sometimes it's just purely for show. Like, maybe that was something that was a requirement of the grant that you had to pull together the community. So once you check that box, it's like bye-bye for the rest of y'all. So to me, Grace, what I've seen that really works is that the community is independent of these initiatives or these newfangled kind of things, because if you have your own goals and your own outcomes, then you're looking for people to partner with who share those. And so you're going to be working on those, whether they're a partner, whether you get the money, you're gonna be the stationary point. And so if you allow people to bring you together, then I've seen less success in that model. It's like the people have to already be understanding what they need, and then they're looking for people to help them, as opposed to the other way around, like these planners or these developers come in and say, "Hey, we got a plan. You want to be part of our plan?" No, we don't. We got our own plan. So that would be my lessons learned from those kinds of situations, because there is money that gets dangled in front of communities, and sometimes it causes internal strife between folks in that community, and which is sad, because those people who dangle the money, they're going to be gone after a certain point. And yeah, and they're going to leave you in a chaotic mess and mad at each other when you should be working more closely together. So do you think that's one of the challenges of doing this work, is the stakeholders don't always have the vested interests of the community at heart?
I think I've definitely seen that in East St. Louis. You see a lot of these nonprofit organizations, and there's so many, but where's the change? Where's the change in East St. Louis? I haven't seen the improvement or the proof that what they're doing is working in the community. In
And
my
it's,
project,
go ahead, go ahead.
in my project specifically, I think I was too focused on the proof. I was like, I want people to see when they see my campaign, I want them to see, yeah, Grace is making a change. Grace is out there every morning at 7 a.m. picking up bottle caps. That's what I wanted. But I was discussing my campaign with my mom before applying to the Jamala Rogers award. And I was talking with her, and she was like, Grace, you should make yard signs to get more political, to encourage political action. And I was like, yard signs? Like, how am I supposed to change the world with a yard sign? I was like, it's enough people putting yard signs, enough politicians putting yard signs up. So I thought about it some more. And as my mom suggested, a two-part process is really helpful, focusing on real change, but also the policy that accompanies it. And right now, I haven't seen nonprofits in East St. Louis doing either, but we can only hope.
Yeah, so have you got yourself a yard sign? Because that to me is connected with you talking about public education about the environment. And so when people see a sign, if they can read it, if that does, you can't help but not think about it, because you say, I wonder what that's about, or oh, they want us to do this. I mean, it depends on how explicit the message is. So are you looking at have already designed your poster, or is that in the making?
Yes, I've already designed it, and I'll be launching my campaign and distributing these signs at the annual Family Fun 3K walk that's held in Lincoln Park in East St. Louis every year. I'll be distributing those at the cleanup before the pre-event cleanup before the day before, and on September 13th, which is when the event is. And then I'll be continuing my campaign at a build-up cleanup event in East St. Louis that I'll be tabling at September 18th and 19th.
And
So that
so,
week is a week that I'm really looking forward to. Yeah,
it's
I
gonna
can
be a
finally
busy
get my
week.
project out and rolling.
Yeah. So can you describe the sign, the yard sign?
So right now I'm making it really simple. Just a few simple words that, so it's not completely finished, but I am still designing it, but I have an idea. So simple wording, but very bold contrast. So I'm thinking black and white. So people can see it and understand the message that we need to have a part in how our communities look and feel.
So at some point, I'd love to see what that looks like, and
Yes, of course.
because it's one that could resonate in other communities. And yeah, and so are you also trying to organize people in a certain way? I know you're busy, and school will be starting, soon. And so, how much you can do in terms of bringing people together, but is there some form of organization around your project that is not just only you doing it, but it's some other hands, eyes, feet that are also carrying out the vision?
So I haven't thought that far into my project yet. Right now it's just me, which I am starting to think about. Like as I'm starting school, I'm like, wow, I have college application, I have SAT practice, I have all of these things. But right now, I think I can handle it.
Okay, but it might be good to bring somebody along, particularly in the neighborhoods that are in being impacted, to say, "Hey, this is something I think you could help me with, and it's going to benefit your neighborhood as well." What in East St. Louis, who's had a myriad of struggles economically, politically, not unlike a lot of smaller black communities, and so. I remember East St. Louis when, and I say when it was more robust. And so, what you mentioned earlier about a planner, and I'm wondering, are there plans afoot to revitalize at least certain portions of East St. Louis that draw people to it? I mean, there's some diehard people, and then you have the high school there that is infamous for, like, scholars and athletes. And so there's assets still there. They just need to be like a garden, like tilled and the weeds pulled up around it so that they can actually flourish. So what have you seen going on in East St. Louis, the heart of East St. Louis, that looks like there's something going on that's going to revitalize that the spirit that once was there?
So for the past 2 summers, I've been interning with the JJK FAN, Food, Agriculture, and Nutrition Innovation Center in East St. Louis. I think that has been really transformative to see initiatives in my community that are passionate about the same issues I am. So they're working to connect youth to jobs in agriculture and also educating them about clean eating and building gardens and green space and giving them access to these green spaces and their families as well. And I think my work on the task force connects to that very strongly because it's about connecting people to the resources that are there.
Do you know if there are any courses in the East St. Louis public school, whether it be in high school or in middle school, that focus on the environment? Are you aware of any of those
I'm not
programs?
sure, but that I think I'm also through this conversation, I'm thinking of adding another pillar to my campaign. It should be about research. So research about the existing structures, about upcoming innovation that's happening in the city. I think that's a great thing that I should add.
Yeah, especially
Very
young
valuable.
people. Yeah, if you're thinking about how to keep that the momentum going based on what you're doing, because who knows, your college may not be in the metropolitan area, and so does that mean your project dies because you're away somewhere? And so I would be thinking about, like, some of those youth organizations, whether they be a club at the school or maybe a church has some young people doing some stuff with them. But yeah, because I think first of all, young people have the energy, and once they get their teeth into something, they don't want to let go. And it's also so therapeutic. The gardening part that you're doing is so therapeutic. And when we think about I'm thinking about the young people that are contemplating or actually actualizing suicide, like, what could they be doing, or instead of thinking dark thoughts? And a lot of times they don't have a lot to do, so those thoughts become consuming. But yeah, we just don't have enough for young people to be involved in very positive things that uplift them, that tap into their talents and skills, because we got some talented folks. They all don't all aren't rappers. Some of them are very analytical. They can put stuff together. They can do the research that you were talking about. They can articulate the message. And so there's just so much they can do with the talents that they have. And I always say that young people are undeveloped because we haven't developed them. But I'm thinking about, what are some of the challenges that you see in your own community, but also you're going back and forth through St. Louis and looking at, like, What are the obstacles for folks really understanding how important the environment is? Because we're at a point, Grace, where the whole damn world is literally on fire. You know, Europe has fires that they've never really had before because of global warming. And, you know, on the western side of this country, you know, not just now, California, but going up to Washington, it's just like a line of fire. And then we have water shortages. So you know, so the environment, as people know it, or should I say, don't know it, is getting ready to come down hard on us. And so when you don't have food, you don't have water, you can't grow anything. I mean, I think it's very creative that people are doing the what is it, the water thing, hydroponic stuff. Okay, that's an alternative, but are we so the ground so poisoned that we can never ever use it again? And so what kinds of things do we need to be thinking about when we look at the impact of global warming, the impact of corporate pollution on our communities, and whether or not people really see that that's their issue?
So historically, and a lot of my research has focused on this, like the people who are able to escape environmental pollution or hazards have been people who are wealthy. So we see that just living in America, you know, we get to put all of our other environmental issues on the global south and the global poor. But now we're beginning to see that affect our own, the poor people in our own community, the low-income communities here in America. And I think the biggest barrier to that is has been public education around it, because people aren't seeing themselves as able to make a change, able to make a difference. They're just they've just been conditioned to accept injustice, and that's really the it's really dangerous. So if people understand the issues affecting their communities, and more importantly, understand why those issues exist, they can put more pressure on the people in charge to make change. And I love reading. So one of my favorite books is Fahrenheit 451. And in the novel, books are burned and people lose access to the knowledge that would allow them to question the society around them. And a theme that is standing out to me when I read this is the danger of a society where people stop questioning what they see. So low-income communities don't have to imagine this dystopian society of Fahrenheit 451, where their world and environment is shaped by decisions they didn't really have power making. We can see the effects of those decisions every day, and that's why education is so important. So when people understand their power in making change, whether that's in illegal dumping, pollution, or a lack of green spaces, they can begin by asking not just why is this here, to what can we as a community do to change it. And I think that's where the action begins.
I totally agree, and I've had different communities on this radio program because I do want to use it as a platform for just the kind of education you're talking about that normally people may not get. And I remember after the Oppenheimer movie that won all kind of Oscars, I know some folks in Nevada and Arizona who said like some of that stuff is not true. Because first of all, one of the things they said is that the communities where they did the test bombing, there was no communities there, and that was a lie. And so I had some of the folks from those communities on to talk about it and talk about what has happened since that radiation. And almost the whole damn town has different forms of cancer. So when I think about the environment, we have to make people's be front and center saying the environment is me. I am the environment and the environment is me. Because then you want to work as hard as you can to make sure it is healthy, pure, and accessible. And the same thing here. You know, I had folks on who were children during Pruitt-Igoe when our own government was spraying the chemicals.
Lead paint, yeah.
Yeah, and so a lot of those folks ended up with different forms of cancer. And when they tried to rally to see, okay, can we even find out what you were spraying on us? Because being kids, they thought it was fun. They were like, oh, you know. And now now, you know, people have died prematurely. And so when they were questioned, the government about, okay, what was in there so we know what to look for and we can tell our doctors what, they say that's a matter of national security. And so they met with that kind of resistance right off. But I think if we are more proactive, like what you're trying to do, then some of the things we see, we already know, okay, some that's not right. Some what's going on with that? What is that really about? Let me find out what's going on there. I think we have to be curious enough when we see stuff like that to question it, particularly if developers are a part of it and if the government is a part of it. That ought to be raising all kind of red flags. So what have you seen in East St. Louis that you think people really understand about the environment? Like when they see it, they know what happened, they know what's going on. Even if they're not involved, they know that that's bad. That's bad for my health. That's bad for my children's health.
I think that the case that I've seen most recently with this has been, so for the Young Visionary Award, I submitted a video on environmental racism in East St. Louis, and I interviewed Dr. Cindy Reed, a former East St. Louis resident, and I documented her experience with environmental racism in two parts of East St. Louis. So the second home where they moved to is close to Frank Holton State Park. So it's a state park. They're thinking like, where, like, what would the environmental challenges be if you're right next to the green space, a government protected green space? But then after construction, highway construction, the park starts to fill with raw sewage. Like when it rains, it starts flooding with sewage. And that's causing all sorts of health problems in that community. So I know a lot of time, like, a lot of times people will be like, yeah, don't like go fishing over there because like you don't want to get sick. Or Dr. Reed recalls her mom telling her like don't play in the yard as a kid because she didn't want to get sick. So it's really hazards like, and even there's a sign that at the park that says like they're like flooding causes the sewage to come up, or that it's an environmental hazard. So
Wow,
really,
wow.
And I don't think that there's been much action to remedy that, but I'd love to see it. But then that goes back to the policy, and policies that protect Black communities because they are worth protecting.
And of course, our the health indicators for us are fairly poor. You know, whether it be asthma or other respiratory diseases, whether it be diabetes, you know, the lifestyle, it depends on your environment. And so we still haven't made that connection as clear and pointed as we should, because I think if we did, we see some changes in the way that people operate. They may still have food deserts, no grocery stores. But then they start looking at what happens with if I grow my own food, even if it's just a couple of vegetables, and then I could supplement it with something else. But we've almost lost the art of farming. You know, gardening can be a hobby, but it also can be a lifeline to your health. And so many of us don't even know how to do that. And I have to include myself in that. But I mean, I can get out there and do a little hoeing and stuff like that. But what it really means, like when you plant certain stuff, what time of the year you do that, what can be planted and what type of soil. The older generations got that down, but that's a dying art now that, you know, tends not to be passed down because it's hard work. It's not easy work. You got to be tending to that stuff on a daily basis. So I'm
And
just
that's a part of the reason why I'm interested in going into the field of agriculture and foods and plant science specifically, because there are ways that we can make innovations in crops and that to help our community. So to repair soils, there are crops for that. There are crops that we can engineer to be more resilient in heat or drought conditions. And that's not only for communities that struggle with food insecurity here in the US, but globally, we can make these innovations in the field.
So, are there community gardens that you've seen spot, you know, grow and develop and bring community people in, where it's intergenerational and not just, elderly people out there like talking and hoeing and that kind of stuff, but people really do see it as a community resource. I just recently talked to somebody who had a garden and they just love doing it. But they said now it's the vegetables are time, it's time to like do something, and there's not enough people to get them. And so I just think that if we had those kind of people who don't mind doing that work, we could build something around that, so people who really need that food, those that fresh vegetables and fresh fruit, certainly have a place to do that. And it seems like with the various empty lots in East St. Louis, that there may be an opportunity for folks to do that if somebody was a catalyst.
But a big issue with those community gardens is that, well, with community gardens in general, is that they have a short lifespan, and that's up in part because of what you're saying, the workforce behind it. There's not people to attend to it, to weed. And I know from my own personal experience with gardening, it takes so much work, which is why I would love to grow it, but it's a small operation because it's just like me and my family right now. But also funding, it, and especially now in our current climate, it's kind of hard to secure funding for urban community gardens. But what my campaign is focusing on is also supplying volunteers for those gardens in East St. Louis so that we can see them continue to be supported, and then also passing that information down to the younger generation.
And so I think if we see it as an organized entity, then it's not like one person, it falls on them. Like you have a crew of people that maybe they only come once a week to do what they're supposed to do, because if somebody else is going to come the next day to do that. There was a urban gardening program in Kansas City that when the current administration came into office and they were doing the Doge thing, literally cut $1 million from that program, and almost all of their projects were canned and people laid off. So to your point about like how difficult it is and the obstacles and challenges now, it is, but it goes back to self-determination. What do I want in my community? What do I need to do, and who do I need to be doing it with? I always say find your people and see what you can make happen, because you're not going to be able to do it by yourself. And I just, when I look at East St. Louis, and I was over there for the anniversary of the 1919, massacre, racial massacre, and I'm looking every time I go over there, I see more land that's not being used, and I'm thinking, okay, what could happen here? I'm already in my head like plan, ooh, that's something that could do. But yeah, I just think that young people where they live can be a part of planning what that looks like. And you have a government over there that I think that would be open to young people having projects. This is one way to, quote, keep them off the streets, but it's also a way to involve them in the vitality of the community, which I think a lot of young people, particularly black young people and particularly black males, don't feel like they're a part of the neighborhoods and society that they are in now. And so when they start, acting up and acting out, then we say, what's your problem? As opposed to like, what happened to you? What do we need to do?
Yeah,
What,
there's
how?
a proverb that reminds me of. Children who are not embraced by the community will burn it down to feel its warmth. And I think we especially see that in low-income communities because the communities themselves are not warm for young people to thrive. That's the word that I'm missing. And I think that we were missing at that conference about community health and wellness. Everyone was talking about, oh, young people, they're aimlessly walking the streets and not and skipping school. You have these high truancy rates, but we're not looking at the root of those issues, and that's that the community is not set up for success.
And I think if you only look at the young people themselves who are the symptoms of a problem, then you definitely will never get to the root. In fact, if you ask them, they may tell you how to get to the root of the problem, but we aren't listening to them. So I remember St. Louis had this, they were having problems with truancy, and particularly young people coming on the first day of school. Which was foreign to me because we loved the first day of school because we often had like that one new outfit that we could show off. But what they did was started doing all these incentives. Well, that might get them there for the first day because they're going to get something. But what do you have for them afterwards? See, I don't mind you doing the incentive, and then once they get there, they say, "Ooh, we're going to be doing this next week. We're going to have this project. We get to go on this field trip." But if you got the same old, and what I used to like sometimes tease, but it was true. All you got for kids is some Ditto sheets that they can color or, you know, draw lines on. That's not going to keep them that's not going to keep them busy or engaged or curious about the life that they live and their connection to the broader society. And so that's why I think a lot of the programs could be going through the schools as an institution that's there, that's in the community, that people know where it is accessible. Just much more could be happening in that space that doesn't. And I get why. But we need to change that around. So the young people that you are in contact with at school, in your social circles, what are they talking about? What do they see are challenges for them moving forward? Besides a good job, because those are vanishing like, you know, arrows missed. What do they see are challenges, and what do they think they need right now from grown folks and from the society?
So at that conference, there was another youth present. She goes to the Charter High School in East St. Louis, and she talked about a barrier to getting to the Charter High School was transportation. That's a really big one. And I'd say that for me too, because I go to school out in Leduc from East St. Louis. So we make that drive every single day,
Twice a day.
and twice a day. So the public transportation isn't what it needs to be for communities to access the things that they need. And that really, like, tons of food goes to waste in food banks, and in stores in East St. Louis because people can't get to them. People physically cannot get to them, get to those resources.
And are the policymakers over there trying to eliminate that problem? Because it seems like it ought to be, I'm not going to say easy, but less difficult than some of the other challenges that people are facing, like, you know, healthcare and medical treatment.
So we're talking about that on the task force. Recently, they redid a bus stop on a main street in East St. Louis. So that's it's looking like a step in the right direction.
And are there mobile trucks that are moving around that have fresh fruits and vegetables? Because I know that was a thing at one point, that people were not expecting folks to come to a physical place, but they would go into communities that were less served so that the food could be more accessible.
Not that I've seen in East St. Louis yet, but I have seen it across in other communities as well.
It
And
seems like
that could
that.
be something to bring up.
Yeah, I would think the wellness committee could do that. And most of the time, there's some health and human services department connected with city government that could start looking at how to do that. Because if you know, one out of five children in this country go hungry. What? That, I mean, we this that's like a statistic for a third world underdeveloped country. When we got food, we got the resources, but what's going on here? What's going on? And so I'm thinking that it's going to be folks like you who are going to be asking the hard questions, who are going to do the legwork, and ultimately who are going to be pursuing studies to help deepen their understanding about the systemic way that we can make change around food and accessibility of food, healthy food. Now, as you know, your health and human service guy did do something that I have to applaud him for, and that's this whole thing around, you know, this processed food, because that is so detrimental to poor folks, because that's what a lot of folks are eating. And so when you look at them, you can see that they are not healthy because of the food that they're eating. And so that was a plus. And I'm thinking about, for example, what's being served in cafeterias in public schools that are not healthy, that are some of those overly processed food. And of course, kids are eating potato chips and this and that. So part of the education really starts at like what you eat and what it does to your body. And how do we
Which
get
also
juvenile?
affects,
Yeah.
which affects crime rates, and then also literacy, because learning, it's so essential to how our brains function. And we're not pouring attention to a very important issue. I don't think we can see the connection just yet.
Yeah, and that could be a big part of a campaign to really. I keep thinking about this. I am the environment. The environment is me, to help people understand, like, you can't get away from it. It's, no matter where you are in this country, the environment is going to have an impact on you, on your very essence, and ultimately on your future. Because, like you said, if you got some kind of learning disability because you didn't eat the right foods, that automatically is stifling your ability to be successful in life. And so we are not making those connections. We're not connecting those dots for our young people. And so I really applaud what you're doing, Grace. Glad that you are a visionary, not even just because you're Jamala Rogers' visionary, but you are a visionary before you got that title. And so keep up the good work. Appreciate all you do, and let me know if you need anything from this direction, and particularly if you need another platform. Like when you all start doing that stuff in East St. Louis, he's like, we want to come on the show and talk about that because we think we're doing some great stuff here. Definitely let me know, and I'm interested in that yard sign too.
Thank you. I'll be sure to send it over.
Yeah, so this is Jamala Rogers, and if you are trying to get some of the previous shows, you can go to jamalarogers.com, and not only the shows there, some of the writings that I've done for the various publications. The videos are not on the site yet. We're still trying to figure that out, but they are on the YouTube station. So you can just go to Jamala Rogers YouTube and see the video portion of that. And this one will be there as well after today. And the audio will be on the website. So we thank you for joining us today, listening up. There's lots of stuff going on this weekend, including Black Pride, just a number of things. And this is Black August still, so check your calendars to see what's going on, see how you can be better informed, how you can get engaged, how you can be connected. Because y'all, we gotta fortify our community during this particular time. And going forward to November, it's gonna get crazy. It's gonna be totally crazy, and we will need community. You're talking about community wellness. We community protection as well. And so we need each other now more than ever. So yeah, this is Jamala, and thank you for listening. And I will see you on the battlefield.
We don't need